Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Mile Hybrid Podcast. Nope, it's the Mile Hybrid Show. I'm your host, two-time world champion, Ryan Kent, along with my co-host, a one-time world champion, Rich Ryan. How you doing, buddy?
Dude, that was on. You said you wanted to do the intro. I pressed record, and then you just froze. Like, straight up, nothing was happening for a while. I'm like, oh, man.
I honestly didn't have anything planned.
You had to think about it for a couple seconds, and you're like, all right, we're on now. Now we got our drip situated correctly. We have our appropriate attire on, and now we're ready.
Yes. Yes, we do. Dude, what you been up, dude? I feel like I haven't seen you since 4th of July.
Yeah, it was only like five days ago.
Yeah, but we talk like on the reg.
We do. I was off the grid for a minute. You ever get out? Yeah, like you ever get out that just like way out and you don't get reception or anything?
Yeah, we're in Colorado. That happens.
I don't know. I don't know. Like since I've known you, you've had a young child. So I don't know how often
you don't think I get out?
I know you get out, but you're out like running and stuff. Like I was out for, a couple of days, not too long, but it feels good. It really does feel good
Were you camping on the ground? Were you cooking out of a stovetop, eating beans?
Dude, it's like a hut, it was called. So there's no running water, but it had power through a generator. So we had some electricity. But yeah, we were cooking off of like a wood stove. And we went with a big group. And one dude was a professional chef until like last year. So he cooked some meals for us. And it was like a banging ass meal that I wouldn't even like have at home. So it was like more like glamping, but like way out there.
Did you know the people you went with? Were they like friends or?
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't think I got friends? Cause I didn't go with you. You're like, who are you hanging out with?
Where were you?
It was out near Leadville. It was probably 20 miles north of Leadville.
Nice.
So
I've been up that way.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's really high peaks, right? Like that's like the real up there. Like at Leadville, I think the race starts at 10,000, I believe is the case. Gotta get that camera situated on point. Now we're ready. So my plan was to go and run Elbert. Have you run a 14er? Have you ever done?
The only 14er I've done, sadly, is Pikes Peak.
Oh, really? Did you run it or just kind of hike it?
Ran / hiked.
Got it. Because there's a point where it's just not going to be a run.
Yeah, it was back in 2015 when I was prepping for Spartan Worlds, and I did it with Isaiah. And we made this pact at the bottom. We're like, hey, we're just going to go up this, have a good time, enjoy being in nature. Like, this isn't a competition. And the moment we started, Isaiah was gone. And I pretty much did the whole run up from the bottom of Bar Trail to the top of Pikes Peak by myself.
That's long, too, right? Blast.
Yeah, it's long. It was like three hours, maybe, roughly. Maybe a little less, 250.
Oh, okay. So it's not... I thought there was like a... Is it 12 up and back? Or I thought there was like a 12... I thought there was like the full marathon was like the up and back.
It's like it's a half marathon up.
Okay. So you just went up?
Yeah, and then caught a ride down from the top. But I remember being like, once you get above like 13,000 feet, it's just hard to exert like any energy whatsoever. Your fingers are starting to swell up. Your breathing just feels weird. Like you just there's like no oxygen.
And that's where it starts to get real steep. It seems like 12 is about where the tree line stops. And then it turns into like really rocky, big terrain. I've never done Pikes Peak, but for some of the bigger mountains I've done, it just seems like it ends up being rockier and more of like a scramble. So I was going to do Elbert, which is the tallest mountain here in Colorado, because that was only like when I looked it up, it said 45 minutes from where we were staying. I was like, great. So I got up early, got up at 4 a.m., got in the car, went out. Yeah, I was like making it happen. But there was two different ways to kind of get into this hut. And one way, the road is really rocky and nasty and our car is just shitty. So I didn't want to go that way. So I went around. And by the time I got to reception to see where I was like an hour and a half away from Elbert, and I'd already been driving an hour. So I was like, am I really going to drive 2.5 hours to do this run when Elbert is 2.5 hours from Denver? Like I could just do that from home, mm-hmm. you know? So I started to, and I was like, fuck it, I'm going to go. And I started going that way. And then
you're by yourself.
I'm by myself. Yeah. Like I wasn't with Amy runners. Or... Amy was out there, but most of the people there, they're more into hiking or rock climbing, different various Colorado stuff, fishing people like apparently. Maybe one day that'll be something we'll do. You want to go fishing one day?
I'm down.
Let's do it.
I'm down.
So I'm out there and then it's like, now it's like 5:30-ish and the sun should be up and it's just not. And it's super cloudy. And I pull off to the side where I have some reception and check the weather. And it's calling for thunderstorms, like heavy winds. And I'm just like, I'm not going to drive another hour and a half to get halfway up this 14,000 foot mountain and have to turn around once I get above like the tree line and just like have it be a complete waste. So I backtracked it and then found a trail that was like 10 miles from our camp and did like a big 12 mile loop. So I drove 2.5 hours to then start
nice.
The 10 miles away.
Was it still a good run?
It was amazing.
Did you enjoy it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. You can't
play around with the weather up there.
I know.
At that kind of altitude. I mean, remember that one time me, Sarah, you and Amy went up, it was Mount Morrison, which I think the summit is like just under 7.
Yeah.
Maybe. And the weather
turned, right next to Red Rocks.
Yep. Yep. And the weather turned on us like right before the summit. We weren't even a couple hundred feet from the top. And all of a sudden a freaking lightning storm just came out of nowhere. I'm trying to forge on to the top and everyone's like, this is a bad idea. And then a big lightning strike just hit, I don't know, just right like beyond where we were.
We could see it. Like, oh yeah. Boy.
Then I was like, all right, fine. I guess that's the sign that we need to turn around. But yeah, you can't play around.
Amy was trying so hard to keep it cool in that moment. She was like not interested.
She wasn't happy with me.
She wasn't interested in taking on the weather on that mountain, but she was like, hey, these are like our new friends, so we'll keep it going. So trail running in general is something I very much enjoy. You like it a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
For hybrid, how do you think it helps?
I think it's one of the best forms of compromise running that you can do, honestly. The constant like elevation changing, like when you climb a big hill and then summit it, like there's that lactic buildup that you get in your quads, like that's very similar to lunges or a sled push. So I think it's actually very beneficial.
Yeah, I think.
How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I go back and forth because I love the climbing element.
And the power output too that you get.
Right. Like there's a muscular endurance part to it. It's like undeniable. Oh shit, what you got? Represent.
Bingo.
The power output part is undeniable. Like there's a muscular endurance piece that is very localized in your legs that I feel like would translate over. Where I have a hard time is it's just like the running ends up being pretty slow. You know, like when I run yesterday, it was like I was out for like 2+ hours. But I knew it was going to be a long run. So I like was kind of just like trotting around, you know?
Yeah, you're not really working on the skill of running.
No.
When you're out there doing a trail run.
Do you think you could do all your zone 2 work on trails? Zone 2 run
work? I would
work?
Say all of it. I mean, I'd want to spend some of it on the machines.
Okay, that's true. That's true. Yeah. But most of your run work, you think you could?
For sure. And I've done it.
What do you think the benefit is to a road then?
Just working on efficiency.
Mm.
Your stride efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's both ways. Because, I mean, the trails are just so much more enjoyable, but it just feels slow on them. So that's where I like have a hard time with it sometimes.
And you're just, dude, you are not a trail runner.
Come on,
at
bro.
At all.
Dude. Come see me. We'll go. I'll give you that Isaiah treatment if we go on Pike's Peak. You won't even see me out there.
Okay. Let's say hypothetically you do beat me to the top. You could beat me to the top by an hour and I would still beat you by an hour on the way back down.
that could potentially be the case. Have you ever done the actual incline?
Yeah. Oh yeah. A bunch of times.
I still need to do that one.
You haven't done it?
No. Just a mini incline. Over and over.
I've had some good dude, I did it one time, three times in a row when I was training for Tahoe in, I think it was 2018 or 2019. I can't remember. But my climbing endurance was like off the charts that year. I think the best I've ever done up it is like low 22, maybe.
Okay. That's really strong, right?
Pretty quick. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's what, 2 miles and...
No, it's a mile. It's a mile up.
And 2,000 feet?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
And there's a couple false summits along the way, too, where you think you're getting close to the top, and then you crest it, and then realize there's another hill. And then you crest that one, and then there's another one.
Do you miss the training for, like, Spartan Mountain stuff?
A little bit. Just because I love trail running so much. You know, I love being out in nature. But that being said, like, I think you can still train for Spartan not doing a ton of trail running.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. Like, yeah, you want to, if it's a super technical, like if you're racing Big Bear or Utah or Palmerton, yeah, sure. You want to get out on the trails and get some of the, just build your muscles appropriately, you know?
The skill part too.
Yeah. And the skill component. Like if you're going to be on super technical terrain, you want to spend some time on super technical terrain. But at the end of the day, it's still, if you train the right energy system, it's going to translate.
Yeah. Speaking of Palmerton.
Yes. We need to talk about this.
What's the word?
It kills me to have to say this, but I'm not going to be going.
Not doing it?
Not doing it. I think I jumped the gun a little bit. I got excited.
You did?
So I'm going to make a long story long here. This week was, everyone should know by this point what's going on at work at UPS. I still don't have my job back, by the way, but I'm hoping to have it figured out in the next week or two. I've got to go in front of a panel and basically beg for my job back, more or less, which I'm not looking forward to because that's going to crush my ego, crush my pride. But if it's what I got to do for my family, that's what I'll do.
Gotta do it.
I'm optimistic about it. But this week was my vacation week from UPS. And the reason I selected this week was because Sarah's, one of her best friends from childhood, is getting married in Mammoth, where Sarah grew up. And we were planning like a big road trip from Colorado out west, spend time with her family and all this stuff. And, you know, that's been the plan for a couple months. And then with what went down at UPS, I immediately kind of just went back into athlete mode. I'm like, well, if I'm not working, I guess I'm going to just go back into being a full-time athlete. I'm going to start chasing the Spartan races again, get my qualifier for Abu Dhabi. And because the prize money there is really, really good.
Mm-hmm. 20K for a win.
20K, I think 10, 15 for second, 7,500 for third. I mean, it's really nice. And I honestly believe I could get on the podium in that race. And my fitness right now is strong for that time domain. And I just got super excited and thought that I could logistically make it happen. But the reality is I just can't. I can't pull it off. I've already made a commitment. It'd be a lot easier if we didn't have Basin and our dogs, but that makes things a little bit more complicated. So even if I were to send Sarah out to Mammoth and I went to the East Coast, well, we still have to worry about Basin and the dogs. So I have to, you know, backtrack a little bit, and I won't be going to Palmerton, which is super unfortunate. Because again, like, I honestly believe I could go there and at the very least get on the podium. I wouldn't be surprised one bit if I won that race, but yeah, we'll never know.
Bracken's out there just waiting for you. Riker's going to give you that work. He's going to let you know about it too.
It's supposed to be a super stacked race. I think Atkins might be coming down.
He might be coming down. He could also be coming down. Yeah, it could be a really strong one. Seeing some names that we haven't quite seen yet, because we've just seen like VJ and Ryland just kind of beat everyone's ass so far.
Did you see that finish between Kempson and Sean Roberts?
Just like race? Just a clip of it. Did you watch the race?
A little bit.
Were they just neck and neck the whole time?
No, Kempson was, I'd say, 30 seconds in front of Sean pretty much the entire race. He had a hiccup somewhere, but the camera footage didn't catch it.
Mm.
So when it finally got back on them, they were both stuck at, I wouldn't say stuck. Kempson, I think, attempted an obstacle, failed it. And by the time he went back to restart it, Sean had caught up, and now they were both there at the same time. And they essentially went through it together. And then when they got out, you had to go over an A-frame, and they're flipping over the A-frame basically at the same time, get over the A-frame, and then it's a 50-yard sprint to the finish. And you don't see that often, dude.
In OCR. Have you ever had a finish like that? And aside,
yeah, with Killian in Alabama in 2019.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Wasn't there someone else right there too?
I don't think, not that I can remember.
Because Kempson won that. Oh no, Kempson got VJ won that race.
VJ won that one.
Then it was Kempson.
Hmm. And then Atkins.
Okay.
And then I think Killian and I were battling for a fourth.
Who got fourth?
Killian got me.
Okay. Yeah, that's how you put it. You're like, yeah, we were battling for fourth. Yeah, who got fourth? So when you're looking at Palmerton, what made you most excited? It was like, I mean, the money sounds great. Like the race itself, like that format, like racing for a championship again, like, cause that's almost like starting something new. It would be like, it'd be like coming back into hybrid for the first time against, like, oh, like wondering how well you could do. Like, what level of excitement was the one that was like pushing you to be like, all right, this is it. I'm doing this.
So I wasn't looking forward to the heat and humidity of the East Coast.
Yeah.
But the race, I mean, the qualifying rounds are going to be probably, what, 10 minutes
at most.
And then the final would maybe be a half hour. So the heat and humidity shouldn't be a huge factor, but that was kind of like, not really looking forward to doing that. But I think a part of me just wanted to prove that I could still go out there and do it. You know, like I did one OCR race last year, which was Spartan Race Slow. And I think I finished eighth or ninth and beat Hunter.
Stacked field.
Yeah, I mean.
Fast race.
I was happy with that. And I really thought I could come in here and just kind of prove that I can still compete with these guys in OCR. And I think that was the piece that was really exciting me the most was, you know, it's obvious that I've kind of transitioned away and out of that sport and into hybrid. But again, I still do a ton of trail running. I'm very, very, very fit and was really looking forward to battling those guys. You know, I'm used to battling the hybrid crew now. I haven't raced Atkins or Kempson or any of these guys in a long time. And I think that would have been a lot of fun.
Were you like giving yourself a bunch of chips on your own shoulder? Were you like envisioning other people talking shit that you weren't going to be able to do it?
A little bit
of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Another piece I wasn't looking forward to was the laser gun.
Oh, right, right.
I don't think I've ever shot one of those. I hit up VJ and was like, hey, do they let you test those things out the day before? And he said they do. So to get a little bit of practice before the race would have been nice. I think that would have made a huge difference. So that part was kind of like, I don't know how that's going to go. Let's say I hypothetically was winning the race and lost 20 seconds there or something. You
right.
know, like I'd be
right.
super frustrated, but regardless, I think it just would have been fun to kind of get back out there and see some of the Spartan community and connect with them again.
That's one thing that I don't miss about Spartan and OCR in general is just
the
all
community.
The community, they can go all the worrying about things like the spear throw or like just different pieces of the race that you might not know or might not know how prepared you're going to be for it. Like if the weather is nasty or if like the course is just extra technical in one spot that I wasn't anticipating. Those unknowns I really did not like about Spartan. I know some people do like it. It's like some of their favorite part about it. But for me with hybrid, it's like, okay, ski erg, farmer's carry, assault bike, got it. But when it's all out of sorts and not really like that's just kind of hard to figure out like what's gonna come. I don't love that part.
I've never been, you know, I wasn't good at Spartan Race because, like, with the skill component, you know, I was able to literally just physically get through things because I was strong. I was never a technical obstacle racer. Like, getting through any of the rigs, it was all, I got through them because I was physically strong. Mm. Like, something like the laser gun, just, I could just see it just very, making me very upset.
Smashing it on the ground.
Yeah. Cause there's no physical component to it at all. It's all skill. And I'll be straight up with you. I'm not a skilled obstacle racer. That's why I haven't done Savage Race. That's why I haven't done OCR Worlds. You know, Spartan was in my wheelhouse and I kind of stuck to what I was good at.
Yeah, I get that too. And it's a different element when you're talking about the technical skill part of it that people enjoy, but I'm with you on that too. I like the, and we align in this way, like the fitness part is mm-hmm. more enticing than the skill part of a OCR.
It's got me a little bit concerned for Grit Games coming up too. In like,
that's soon, right? A month. Yeah. Cause there's two obstacle pieces of that, right? There's a straight up rig, I believe. And I think there's like a short course obstacle race, more or less.
Mm-hmm. Aren't you guys Race Brands designing one of the workouts, right?
And I made sure that all the things Ryan Kent is going to have a hard time with are going to be put into that piece. It's just going to be what would your worst race be? Like if we had to take all the things that you wouldn't want in like a 30-minute race, what things would we see out there? Start with wall balls.
Whoa. Really just anything that would require hanging.
Like an OCR event?
But I've always been able to lock my arms out at 90 and get through things. Yeah. Something that would be long enough to where I would actually have to extend my arms and like swing through something for an extended period of time. If it's short, like it's not going to be an issue, but if it's long to where like your biceps will eventually give out and you do have to hang, those kind of things do worry me a little bit. Gibbons worries me a little bit, you know?
Right. Have you practiced that before?
A few times. And it seems like the one they have at their facility isn't as tough as the one that I've seen at FitFocker that I've practiced on a few times. And, There's another one I've done. I can't think of it, but there's doesn't look. I went back and researched some of their live streams from last year, watched a few of them, mm-hmm. and it didn't look that bad. It didn't seem like people were having a big problem with it.
Yeah, because the overhead, is it like a shoulder thing, or it's just like what worries you about like the swinging?
I don't know if it's just like a lack of strength in my lower forearms, like near my wrist or something. I don't have a ton of like squeeze strength either, which you know somebody like Atkins who rock climbs all the time.
Just got to hang on these guys. Unbelievable. It's showing right in your face.
I don't even want to know what you use that for, bro.
It's iron grip. I just pulled it out. I got one of these for OCR because I'm same way. Like if I'm overhead like that, like I have a hard time swinging through obstacles because I feel like I slip off my hands. And I don't know if it's a callus thing. Like I don't have the appropriate calluses across here or what it is, but it just ends up slipping. So I did mm-hmm. buy one of these 1 year and I was like, I'm all in on OCR. And then I was just doing like rock climbing, fucking iron grip.
Do you think it helps?
I don't know. I might start it again. I've been thinking recently about in hybrid, one of the disadvantages I might be at is that my arms themselves aren't as strong as some of my competitors. Like you're over here, you're doing biceps every day, looking in the mirror, flexing on them. I don't really mess with the bicep piece. You know, Hunter, of course, all those dudes in at Worlds, they probably had big arms, right? Magida got some pipes on them. And I was thinking like, does that actually matter? And it doesn't hurt. So I broke it back out recently. I think I'm going to put a little arm phase in.
Look, sled pull. It helps.
Yeah.
Rowing, it helps.
Skiing.
Skiing.
That's it. Burpees. Burpees, I think you could help for sure. Like, I like the pushing. Like, I think that there are some benefits. I don't think you necessarily need to have it, but the sled pull for sure is definitely helpful.
It's just to even out the physique. You know, you can't have a big chest and big triceps and broad shoulders and then just have tiny biceps.
Look good, run good, right?
That's the motto.
That's how we roll. So Palmerton's not happening.
Palmerton's not going to happen.
That's tough.
Dude, have you caught in? I don't even know why I just asked, because you've been out in the wilderness, but Wimbledon's been going on this week, bro.
Oh my goodness. We're on the tennis.
I've been dialed in. I haven't looked. So Sarah started her job this week, her new job. So I've been pretty much a stay-at-home dad this
week.
Nice. Hanging out with Basin, watching some tennis, watching some track and field. I am dialed in with Wimbledon right now.
How long is it? I haven't watched.
Wimbledon's 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
The only way I really would consume tennis ever was when I used to watch SportsCenter when I was like a little kid, and I would watch TV and just SportsCenter would be on. That's how I would follow tennis. I'm not locked in.
You're missing out, man.
Should I get locked in?
Dude, there was a great man. Novak Djokovic is in the round of 16 right now. He's facing this Polish guy who I think Djokovic is the 2 seed. This other guy's like the 16th seed. And it's first 3 sets. You got to win 3 sets. And the first 2 sets, Djokovic won. But dude, they went to tiebreaker both times. Like on the edge of your seat, just like what's going to happen. He was down like 3 break points. Came back and won, and like just unbelievable tennis. And then they actually had to pause the match because it was like past midnight in England, so they suspend the match and then start it again the next day. Could you imagine doing that in like a race?
Why do
like
they
you
do
got
that?
Like, I think there's just a time
for
limit
for TV. Ooh. Or are they just like, it's like, hey, we gotta go eat, you know,
we gotta go to sleep,
drink, eat our biscuits, and we got to make some tea.
Could you imagine though, being like at, you know, High Rocks and like after burpees, they're just like, yeah, we're just going to finish the race tomorrow.
That happened to some people. That would happen to people in Spartan sometimes. I don't know if it happened in Elite, but they pull people off of the course because of lightning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So no, that's never happened. And then that happened. I thought that just happened at like a state meet in a 2 mile. They pulled like a girls field off at like deep into it too. Like, 3 to 5 laps or so, and then pull them off of the track. Lightning's one thing, I guess. But look, we were on top of a mountain when the lightning storms happened. Didn't even get hit. We're fine. So I don't see what
tennis
is
one of those things too, where momentum is a huge part of the game, and having a match suspended and then picking up the next day can totally change the outcome of the match.
Totally.
If you're vibing and you're rolling, your serve's hitting, like your forehand's on, your backhand's on, you could wake up the next day and it not be firing, you know? So you'd be like, damn, I'm trying to finish this match right now.
There was, when I was a younger athlete, let's say, baseball for me was always a problem because of how hot and cold it was, and that there was so much personal pressure around like specific skills that it would like really kind of eat at me, you know? So I could imagine tennis, dude, would just be a nightmare. It would be
for
like,
sure.
Like trying to figure out, it's like, okay, I get all like, superstitious with it too.
Dude, like when Novak was down 3 set points. So literally the only thing the other guy needed to do to win the set was to win a point. It was his serve. So usually when you serve, the likelihood of you winning that point is significantly higher. Mm. Novak is down 3 set points and like manages the moment and comes back and like wins it under all the pressure, you know, thousands of people in the stands. It was just like, that's why he's the GOAT, dude.
You gotta have so many tricks, and like you have to have like tricks or skills to keep in your back pocket in those scenarios. You can't show those right away. You know, I'm sure most people, they have like, who are at a basic level, have very few, and it can work to a certain extent. They're really good at a few of them, when you're like a guy like Novak, you can break out something that someone might not even be prepared for in those moments, you know?
Mm-hmm. Something you've just been holding on to for a moment, just like that.
Yeah. And like something you know, execute, you've probably been picking up cues along the way. That's where the whole mental side of it too, where sometimes I wish racing was a little bit more like this, but where you can kind of pick spots to make moves or to, work the competition or be a little bit more competitive, have a little more skill on the side of like your approach. But at the end of the day, it's mostly just like output. It's like if you are a superior, you're probably going to be across the finish line first in that day. And I think that's like what's awesome about that's the sport as well, is that you see greatness, but also how I understand that people might be like, okay, like, so that person's just better, so why are we even watching?
Mm-hmm. Did you catch any of the USA Track and Field?
What is it playing on? How can I watch it? Is it a Peacock situation?
No. They took it off of NBC, which a lot of the athletes there have been vocal about. Just the lack of television broadcasting. Like they took it off of NBC. You can watch it on like USATF.com or something, but you have to pay for it.
That's so ridiculous.
So I've been like back, what do you want to call it? Like going onto YouTube, finding these sketchy accounts and trying to watch it.
Are you getting anything?
For sure. I've seen everything except the men's 10,000. I know that Woody Kincaid outkicked everyone to win that thing. Grant Fisher didn't even make the team.
Really?
Yeah. But other than that, I've seen everything. I gotta say though, I am disappointed in Centro. I know that he's not what he once was, but he didn't even give himself a shot in that 1500 meter final. He went straight to the back, right from the gun, and never even tried to assert himself into the race. I don't know if he was just hoping that people would fade or he could rely on his kick in the last lap. I don't know what he was thinking, but he was out of it from the gun, man.
Is he 35 or is he our age?
No, he's younger.
Are you sure? 30.
I think he's 33.
What?
Hey, Siri, how old is Matt Centrowitz?
Yeah, you're
68.
Right.
It showed me his dad.
The OG. He was in that. He was a coach at American. Is he still?
He might
coach
be
there. Yeah. No, I got 33. So yeah. Okay. That's not too bad. Yeah.
It's kind of out of your prime to be a miler for sure.
Mm.
But I was just disappointed, man. I was just like, it kind of reminded me of my race and at High Rocks Worlds this year, but the year prior when I just let Hunter go. I pretty much let him go this year too. I couldn't respond, but he just gave the race away. Gave the race away. And Yard Nagus is the truth.
He's that guy. Is Yard one?
Mm-hmm. And then it was the guy from Washington. And
oh, really?
I think Cole Hawker got third.
There's three guys from Washington. Any idea which one? One of the collegiate guys came out and did it?
It was Joe. I think his name was Joe.
Fucking Joe. Who is some guy named Joe?
Yeah. Emma Coburn got beat in the women's 3000 in the final 100 meters. She got kicked. Just a lot of exciting.
I gotta catch up. I gotta see some of these sketchy links. Dude, check out what I've been reading.
What you got? Damn, dude.
Bringing it back. See this thing? Once a runner, this is the original print.
That is the original print.
They don't make this shit anymore. Amy was like handing it to me. I was like, be careful with that. This is the only, I won't be able to get this print anymore.
Would you have that packed away in like a shoebox or something?
I usually have it sitting right up there, man. This is like a prime possession of mine. This is something that I'm kind of feeling a little stale in terms of training. I feel good with training. Like things are going well, but I'm not like, it's not kicked into any type of specific gear. I'm kind of like operating at like a 7 out of 10, which I think is appropriate, right? Like I think it could only be like a 10 out of 10 at some point for some points. But at this point, I'm kind of starting to feel a little stagnant. So when I want to really get things operating to another level, I have to take in like other external pieces. Like I'll read different things like Once a Runner or some other like mindset book, or I'll have things like maybe my nutrition will be a little bit more dialed in, or I'll be drinking alcohol a little bit less, or something that makes it so I'm taking the commitment a little bit further. You got anything? You got anything like that when it's like time to really go?
No, but I will say that I had this conversation with Sarah last night.
About Once a Runner?
About Quinn Cassidy? About training.
Oh.
So I think I've mentioned in a previous episode, I'm pretty much capping my sessions right now at about an hour a day. One day a week, I'm going like 90 minutes, but the rest of the week, I'm capping at an hour. And I just feel better. I feel like I have more energy to give to Sarah, to Basin, to just life in general. I have more just energy to do things. And I like the way I feel. I like the training to life balance with, you know, training an hour a day. And I think you're able to actually stay very, very fit training that way. And what I was saying to Sarah was that I think I'm going to keep doing this up until an A race is coming up, and then I'll bump it up. I'll bump up the volume. I'll bump up the intensity, but only when a key race is kind of on the horizon. But the rest of the year,
8 weeks,
like, yeah, maybe 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
And I think I've been feeling more fresh for every session. I feel like every day I kind of have more energy to train. Whereas once you start training 90 minutes a day, 2 hours a day, it's kind of like the only times you can really tap into that next level is like on your intensity days, because you know you have to. Whereas when you keep it to like an hour a day, you can kind of tap into a little bit of intensity almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know. I think I'm gonna stick to what I'm doing right now, especially for DecaFit too, which is a sub 30 minute race, Deca Mile sub 20 minute race, Deca Strong a 11 minute race. Like, there's, I don't feel like I need to be out there for 90 minutes to 2 hours every single day right now.
That's just one thing, especially that I think about a lot, right? Like, where is the line between like being able to continuously improve versus, and like, how far is that between to overtraining to the point where it's a sustainable overtraining? You know what I mean? Like, I think I've been that into that point. I think I've been there in the past year or two too, where I was like, I was putting in so much and I got better, but then I got to a point where I got better and then just like stayed at that same place and just never went up. Right. And that's probably to a point of like just under overtraining, but not really giving myself like the space to improve. So I think about this as well. It's like, is there a time where like, okay, more recovery days, full days off? Like I said, told you before we started recording, I ran 5 miles today. It's like a 35 minute run. Not even. I was probably like more like 30, probably closer to 40 minutes today for 5 miles. And it's like, to me, it doesn't feel productive in that moment. But tomorrow I'm going to feel good, you mm-hmm. know, and then where is the line for tomorrow? Like, how hard and how, what's the recoverability piece? And as aging athletes, unfortunately, that's something that we need to consider some more than I think we have in the past. But me personally, I don't necessarily think about like when I was like 25 or 30 or whatever. And I was like, man, I used to bounce back so much faster then. I don't necessarily know if I feel that way.
Yeah.
But I think that there's something physical that is happening, you know, right now that we're going to have to account for a little bit more, you know.
When was your last rest day? When's like the last time you took a rest
completely
day?
Off?
Yeah.
I did not work out when we flew to Connecticut. That was probably 15 days ago, 16 days ago.
Okay.
How often do you take off?
So during High Rock season, just the stress of training was so high that I needed one rest day about every 2 weeks.
Okay.
Right now, I've had one rest day since High Rocks Worlds.
And that was?
That was
Memorial Day?
6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that right there should tell you something, right?
About like the volume that you're putting in each week?
Yeah, like I'm not training as much as I was during the High Rock season,
mm-hmm.
but I'm also not taking nearly as, I don't need the rest days. You know what I'm saying?
Your frequency
like I don't
is more,
wake
yeah.
up. I don't wake up, you know, in the morning and just like, man, like, I don't know if I've got it today. Like that just hasn't happened, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think you can be more consistent with your training if you dial back the volume a little bit.
Cause that's where it's like sketchy for me anyway. It's like, if I am thinking about taking off days often and just like kind of not like powering through it, you know, then I think that that's a problem. Then it's like, okay, I'm not like listening to my body or I'm overcooking myself and I'm just not willing to adjust or plan appropriately. Like you said, at least you were planning days off, right? When High Rocks was happening. So were you planning them or were you just taking them when you felt like you needed to?
Kind of just when I felt like I needed them. And it was usually about every 14 to 20 days.
See, yeah, I'd rather schedule rest than to take it that way. That way it makes me feel like shit. I'm like, man, I don't got it. What's wrong? And then I'm like worried. It's like, am I doing too much? Whereas if it's planned rest, which I don't do too much of though, I don't know how much you need planned rest. I don't know. I haven't figured out the rest thing.
Well, you didn't make the Elite 15 this year. So.
I worked myself into such a frenzy that I got hurt. Took no rest days until I completely broke in two. And that's what happens.
I want to talk about some compromise running real quick.
Let's do it.
When specifically referencing DecoFit.
Okay.
What do you think is possible for the 5K portion of DecoFit and how close to your 5K road race or 5K just purely running, how close can you get to that during a DecoFit?
That is a good question. First, what's possible for me? Or what's possible for you? Oh, okay, not for you. Okay, good.
Do you think you can run a 16:30?
Yeah, that's what came to my mind was 16:30. For reference, I was 17 flat at AC, and you're around 17:30s, right? For your fastest one,
17:20
is your fastest. Was that AC?
No, I think my fastest I think has been like 17:12.
Okay, where was that at?
I don't remember.
Okay, so that's just not real.
Jamie, look that up.
And I actually did a little bit of looking into this, or like kind of running some like numbers on my own. Like I do a very generic job of looking at numbers when like post races, and I did this a little bit for DECA last year, like trying to figure out where the competition's 5K was versus their aggregate 5K for a DECA, and then what their DECA strong was, and then what their aggregate DECA strong was for DECA fit. And then there was like percentages, and I think it was about 10% on the run side. So my run for DECA fit was 10% slower than what my 5K was like on the road. And there's some sort of number there. I'm going to try to find it real quick. What are your thoughts on it?
I think a good compromise runner should be able to get within about a minute, maybe a little more, minute 15 of their like 5K time. If they were to just go run a pure 5K, I'll say like six, let's just say somebody runs a 16:30 in a 5K road race. And somebody who's really good at compromised running, they should be somewhere around 17:30 to 17:45 in their DECA fit.
Okay.
I think that's someone who's really good at compromised running. If you're not, if that's a feeling that you're not familiar with, I think it's closer to 2 to 3 minutes slower.
Yeah. You know,
if somebody runs an 18-minute 5K and they're not comfortable with compromise running, they might be closer to 20-21 minutes during a DECA fit.
21. That's where, and that's why I kind of did this where I, this is after West Palm. So at the time, I figured I had about a 16-minute 5K in me, and I ran a 17:30 5K at West Palm. Got worked. That wasn't my day.
I don't think at any point during my DecaFit career, if you want to call it that, I've been able to run a sub 16:30 5K.
Okay, so I have you 16. I have you 16 flat. That's no. I was giving you benefit of the doubt. All right, that's my bad, dude. I shouldn't have believed in you as much as I did. So I'll give you 16:30 on here. So in that case, you were closer to 5.5%.
Your boy's good. Your boy's good at compromise running.
And your deck is strong that day was faster than like your deck is strong aggregate was faster than your actual deck is strong.
So what does that tell you, Rich?
It means you should be running faster, pussy.
So run a little bit faster, take a little bit more damage on the stations.
Yeah, I guess where would that end up, right? Like if you ran, like how much time? That's what we don't know, right? If you say you did cook yourself a little bit hotter on the 5K and you did run 17:05, like would you give all 20 seconds back of that in the deck of strong, you think, in the stations?
Probably, and more, I'd say.
You think so?
I think so.
What if you managed it? What if instead of doing 45 seconds on the bike, you did 55 and then...
That's something I want to play around with. I want to play with that specific station.
Have you ever looked at your back stations? Like, is there room to grow? The thing with these back stations though, is that like for you, it might be your back, like the running zone, like this, the runs after the,
yes,
that might be where there could be time. Cause your stations themselves, like, what are you going to go? Like, okay, Ryland was 57 seconds that day. You were 62, like, okay, 5 seconds, whatever. And then Tank, this is 7 minutes. That's not true. Yeah, like this day you were 155, which again, that's just like, you can't get any faster than that. And then you're 107 on your ramp burpees. Maybe, yeah, you could do what? 5 seconds faster than that. So maybe there's 10 seconds on stations here, but your station work was already 11:35 total.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the biggest move that I can make in DecaFit is my run over the last three 500 meters.
Yeah.
It's the best way for me to try to improve. And honestly, that's what I'm working on right now. We can get into it. I've been working on these assault bike intervals into runs afterwards.
Let's hear it.
Well, we'll save that. We'll save that for like that workout for, of the week.
Workout of the week. So I think that, yeah, I think, so I was in 15:30 shape. Probably, I think I was a little bit faster than 15:30. I ran a 5K the Thursday on like Thanksgiving because the DecaFit World Championships was the weekend before Thanksgiving. So we did the DecaFit and then I ran a 5K, like tricky trot. At sea level, and I was like 15:30 that Thursday. I thought I was going to be more excited to run it. I was not. And 15:30 was something that I was a little slower than I thought I was going to be able to do. I think I was maybe in 15:15 shape, and I then ran 17 flat. So almost like came, if say it was 15:30, because I mean, that almost came directly off of my time. So I think percentage is a good way to do it. And mine's, I'm
so if you're within 10% of your 5K PR, you're a pretty good compromise runner.
I think you're pretty good. And like in this elite, what we're looking at, like Ryland was what, 9 something. You were a 6. Jack, this is Jack Bauer. He's 10. And Magida was 5. Magida's a great compromise runner, right?
Dude, Magida can run faster than 16:40. Probably closer to 16 flat.
This was that day. He was like just coming back. Remember, he like didn't really. Riker, I was at right around 10%. He's a good 8%. He's a good compromise runner. Marquette, I was more like 10%, but he's faster on the running and not as familiar with the stations. I think 10% is a good place to shoot for. The closer you can get under that without it pushing your deck of strong further, because the deck of strong, I think that ends up being closer to 5%. This looks like even more like 3 to 4, 3 to 5% of your of your regular deck is strong, your aggregate deck is strong should be 3 to 5% slower.
How many people are doing it faster?
Just you and Rylan this day.
It's weird how that works. I still can't. I don't understand, like, how. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe the run in between somehow alleviates some of the fatigue or something.
Yeah, I think it comes down to like ability to like clear lactate, you know, clear what's going, the byproduct that's happening from the stations or from your runs, like as you're doing it. And maybe you and Rylan on this day, you're even clearing the run, the lactate that might interfere during your runs on your stations because you're good at your stations, you know, so it might work both directions.
Kind of a side tangent. How do you feel about compromise running in high rocks? Like, so somebody's 8K time versus what they do in high rocks. I think it's drastically
way wider
because the output is more on the stations and the time domain is more on the stations, which is ultimately going to leave you more fatigued going into the run. Cause like, I think if I were to run an 8K, 20 low 27s, maybe.
Like, yeah, if you get that.
I think I could say 5:30 pace. So let's just say 27:30.
Okay.
And I think a typical time for me in high rocks is about 30 minutes.
30 with rock zone?
No, not counting rock zone.
Got to count rock zone.
All right, sure. Why not?
Well, because they screw up the measurements, right? Like, because the rock zone's different each time, so the runs are different each time. So if you're going directly off of their 8K, like it's not 8K. Like I think that they're doing. Someone told me once that it's like they're trying
maybe
to have
like 9K,
something like that, with the rock zone, like 8.9K or something like that is what they want of running between the rock zone and the actual run itself. So yeah, I see some people run, their runs are like 28 flat when they're like 27:50 8K guys, you know, when they're maybe not, couldn't even do, like, I think there were some people that ran faster aggregate runs that then they could actually do fresh this year in some of these courses. Yeah, I don't know. So what do you say? 30. So say 32. Is that fair with rock zone?
Sure.
Let's say 32:30. So that would be 15%. For me, it would be insane. Yeah. It'd be like 50.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like my run and rock zone is pretty close. Like it's never that much faster than everybody's. It's usually around the same as yours. And about your stations are like the 2.5 minutes faster, but flat 8K, you don't want to see me there.
It's a good thing we don't have to race that.
You don't want to see me on that.
Do you know who's 8K. doing a high rocks in Sydney?
Who?
Next month? James Newberry.
Oh, that will be interesting.
He was on Greg's podcast.
Rocks Life.
Yeah, Rocks Life. He was saying he could probably run like an 18-minute 5K right now. So. And he's always been, I think, one of the CrossFit athletes who kind of dips his toes more into like the endurance space. I think he's done a couple Ironmans and things like that. Mm-hmm. I think he could actually do pretty good.
We'll see. Because, I mean, I bet there's some guys who are nearly 15 now that would probably run 18 flat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so it's not necessarily a running equation always.
Graham Holiday, perfect example.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah. I don't think Graham Holiday could run much faster than 18 minutes. I could be wrong, but he's just so good, like across the board.
Right. So his like percentage of his 8K is probably closer to like this 5%.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's what's hard to, it's easy for me to kind of guess how fast people are for a 5K in DECA, but guessing what someone's 8K is going to be from high rocks, like I have no idea. You know, like that's such a long race for like that kind of output. I don't think many people are going under 30.
No, you know? No.
But James Newby, that'd be interesting because he could be someone that we talk about the females who come in on CrossFit who do well because they have a little bit more endurance bias. And he might be that guy. And he's finished top 10 at the games before. He was fifth.
He was fifth.
But that was the year. I mean, you're fifth at the CrossFit games. You're fifth at the CrossFit games. They did that. I think that was your Hunter.
An asterisk?
No, no, no. I'm just going to explain 2019. Remember the year Hunter went? Mm-hmm. There was 100 people. And then they immediately cut it to 50. And then they immediately cut it down again. And then they cut it down to 10 for like half of the event. So like if you weren't in that top, so like that was the year like Vellner and Fikowski, they were outside of the top 10. So yeah, it was like one of the Panchecks, James Newbery, Noah, and Matt Fraser. And that was close between Noah and Matt Fraser because Fraser would kill everybody, but Noah would come in second and there was no one to fill in the gaps in between. So like that was a weird year, but still you're fifth at the games. That's fucking amazing. If you're 30th at the games, that's amazing. You know,
he predicted, he thinks he can go sub 65.
Oh, nice. That's actually like a legitimate, like,
yeah,
like that's not, oh, I'm definitely going to go under 60 and break the world record cut type of high rock.
He thinks he can break 60 with proper training. He says he's not taking it. I mean, he's training for it, but if he goes to it and actually has a blast and wants to train for it, he'll actually put in like a block to see what he can do. And he says if he does that, he thinks he can go 60, but this first go at it, he says he'd be happy with anything under 65. And you can tell he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. Because yeah, it'd be easy to be like, I'm going to be the best athlete out there by far. So I'm going to kill everybody. So that's actually great. I think that's fair. If you ran under 65, I'd be pretty impressed.
Same.
All right. What else we got? We got workout of the week. We're not quite at an hour. Oh, I did some hot cold therapy this week. I met up with the Hinman when I went up to a spot.
I saw a little story. You were in the sauna. Looked like you were about to die.
That shit is hot, dude. You ever done the hot cold contrast?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't have this. You got the cold.
So like the gym that I used to work out in Mammoth, I would get in the steam room and then I'd go jump in the pool and then bounce back and forth a couple times.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's weird. It's interesting.
It's a workout.
It like actually,
your heart rate gets up, you know, it gets a little uncomfortable.
I can see how it would improve endurance because there is some evidence that is showing that because of like these heat shock proteins, I believe is what the term is when you're in the sauna, like can kind of help improve like your overall endurance piece. It felt like work, man. We did like three or four, like 15 to 20 minutes in the sauna and then directly into an ice barrel for like two or three. And the first time
that feeling getting in the ice barrel is like,
yeah, it's nice though. It feels great. But then it's like, almost, I got out of the ice barrel and I was like on a different planet. I was like, oh man, something might not be right here. But I could,
like you're on drugs or something.
It was crazy. And it did feel like something happened to my body that day. So I kind of dig it.
Nice.
Might try to keep that in the repertoire. There's a gym here in Arvada that has like that as a service as well. So I might try to make that work.
Do you want to save our sponsorship discussion for next week?
Oh, we probably should.
Yeah, we'll save it for next week.
We just get chatting, man. That's a good one for
you know. We should talk about though, training camp.
Oh yeah. We're doing it.
I'll let you break it down.
So, myself, Ryan Kemp, Meg Jacoby, Camila Massa, we decided that we are going to put together a training camp in Lyons, Colorado, with her partner, Luca Lorenzi, who's also a high-level age group athlete and really fit trainer. He has this great space in the mountains, like only a couple...
You were just
minutes.
There the other day, weren't you?
I was just there and it was like the dream. He has a full setup he has all the equipment you could ever ask for. And it's like not like tight in a space, like a big garage just dedicated to his gym. And he's minutes from trails. He could run to trails. He's minutes from a track. And and this, the space that he has is big enough to host people as well. So we're just kicking around ideas. Like, what if we could do like a camp here where we could bring people in and we can talk about Hyrox and we can train with them and really have and open it up to the public. And so we kicked around the ideas and we said, we're going to do it. We're going to go for it. Ryan Kent's in.
I'm in.
Meg Jacoby's in. Camila Mass is in.
So we are going to cap it at 10 people for this first kind of trial run with it to just see how it goes. But on top of that, we're going to have like full course meals for everybody. Like Luca is a dynamite chef.
he cooked up some like amazing bison for me when I was up there. It was like the most fresh, amazing, clean meat. And Camila has a degree in nutrition.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. So she's going to be there talking about like the nutrition piece as well. So along with like the camps and the workouts, we're also going to be taken through some more like seminar educational type stuff, whether it's like tips on how to improve your performance within the stations themselves or how to kind of like organize your training to kind of build out a bigger, like bigger scope program for yourself. And we're just going to be out there hanging out.
We're just going to be hanging out, dude. People are going to get a chance to just kick it with us. We're going to be doing how many workouts? It'll be over the course of a weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Accommodations are included in this. You will be staying at the Luca compound.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be doing trail running. We're going to be doing Hyrox workouts.
Mostly Hyrox.
I think we're going to do how many over five workouts over the course of
We're going to try to get 5 workouts in over 3 days and 5 different educational pieces. So get in there, getting in on Friday, workout, seminar, food, 2 workouts out Saturday, 2 workouts on Sunday, and Sunday afternoon, we're out of there.
Dude, if I wasn't myself, I would want to come. But I'm already going.
You're going.
I'm already
going
to be there.
So we're going to do an application based. So I'll throw a link in the show notes here that will take you to a form you can kind of fill out. Just let us know like what you think. It is August 18th. So it's pretty quick turnaround here. It's about 6 weeks from today. It's going to be $1,000 for individual. And again, accommodations are already taken care of. You know, we think about it in terms of like what an Airbnb would cost you for 2 or 3 days in the mountains in where Luca actually lives. If you were just to get an Airbnb,
it's insane.
It would be that price.
It's insane.
Yeah.
All you have to pay for is your flight out here and mm-hmm. everything else is literally taken care of.
Yep. Food. Yeah. We should be charging more talking about it now, but hey, $1,000. You'll be there.
$1,000.
So we'll make sure to keep you in with some more details on that end.
Speaking on that same front, I am currently not working at UPS, so I am taking on clients again with one-on-one. So if I haven't been posting to my Train More Hybrid account in a long time, just because once I went back to work in March, it just became a lot to balance. And I did keep on a few one-on-one clients. And now I'm going to open the door up because I'm still kind of unsure about what the future holds with UPS. So if there are some people out there who want some one-on-one coaching, you don't want to go to Rich, you can come to me. Come to me.
I'll just direct it to our guy. And okay, it's good to know. And at the app, we're a little bit behind on the app. It's going to be pushed back a couple of days. We are all collectively not up to date. We are a team in this. But maybe we'll get together this week since you're just chilling. You're just hanging out.
I'm going to Mammoth.
When are you going?
We leave tomorrow.
Oh.
We're going to be gone all week.
All right. Get some videos.
So hopefully I'll be back before next Sunday night so we can record.
Get some videos
next
in.
Week. Workout of the week?
Let's hit it.
All right. So for me, this was a DECA mile specific workout that I did on Thursday. And it break it down just like this. So I've got one of those assault runner treadmills, which makes it very easy to do these compromise running workouts. And this is how it went down. The first set was a 10th of a mile run, 30 reverse lunges, 10th of a mile run, 200 meter row, 10th of a mile run, rest 145.
You're going faster than DECA mile pace.
Yes. Yep. The second one was everyone starts each rep starts with a 10th of a mile run and ends with a 10th of a mile run, and then has a 10th of a mile run in the middle of the okay. two stations. So the second one was 10th of a mile run, 20 box jumps, 10th of a mile run, 25 sit-ups, 10th of a mile run. Then 10th of a mile run, 200 meter ski, 10th of a mile run, 80 meter farmer carry with 80 pound dumbbells, so a little bit heavier, and then a 10th of a mile run. The fourth set was 10th of a mile run, 25 cal assault bike, 10th of a mile run, 15 over the shoulder toss, 10th of a mile run. And then the last set was 10th of a mile run, tank times 60 meters, 10th of a mile run, 15 ram burpees. And then, and after each one of these, it's a minute 45 rest.
Okay.
And then when you finish that last round, you then start back over again at the beginning. So you
did that twice.
You end up getting pretty much almost 10 rounds of, you know, 3.5 minutes of work.
Oh, wow.
It'd be like going to the track and doing like 10 by K or something like that. So it was a grind, dude.
Yeah, did it get rough?
It was a grind. Yeah, it got rough towards the end.
Huh, that's interesting. So you're like taking the intensity pieces and stacking volume of it by not working in too big of chunks and working in rest.
Yep.
That's like a similar vein to what you did last week with the station, with the machine work one, with the EMOM mm-hmm. style. I like it. It's like stacking intensity. That's interesting.
And like, because the intervals are so short, like even though you do the 25 cal assault bike, you know that all you have to do is a 10th of a mile and then 15 over the shoulder, then a 10th, and then you get a big break. So you're really kind of just training, coming out off that assault bike mm-hmm. and really, like if I was under 6 minute pace, it was like good. I was happy
on that
10th of a mile run, like after that, because I was still cranking at 85 RPMs or so on the 25 cal. So, I mean, you're going to be feeling it coming off of that.
Yeah. But, so transition work would be a lot of transition work. Yeah. And working at a really high intensity, but like with such short run, that you could just deal with it.
And you totaled like, let's see, like 2 miles of running.
Right. Right.
You know?
Right. I like
it. I'm also playing around with this other workout where I do 25 cal assault bike at an easy start with like 60 RPMs into a 400 meter run, and then have a 2 minute break, then do 25 cal assault bike at 65 RPMs, 400 meter run, 2 minute break, 25 cal at 70 RPM, and basically get to your limit to where you can no longer sustain a certain pace coming off of the assault bike.
How hard were you running? Like what kind of pace were you hoping
sub
for?
Sub six.
Okay.
Like probably like 540 pace.
Okay. Huh. And you'll do that. So you can do that two ways, right? You can do that until you die on the assault bike, right? Until you can't make your RPMs faster, or until you fall past 6 minute pace or something like that. Nice. I like that. That's a good idea. And that's a good idea then. I mean, that's a great idea. I think that's something that people should definitely do when like trying to figure out how they should approach the assault bike. How are you going to feel after 70? How are you going to feel after 75? How are you going to feel after 80? So then we get into the racing of a better idea.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, you can kind of pin your RPMs to what you know you can do based off a workout like this.
Nice.
These are tip top secrets, by the way. I shouldn't be giving these away.
Yeah, check them out for one-on-one coaching. I might steal that one myself.
What you got? Did you do anything this week?
Dude, I was out crushing, man. I was reading Once a Runner, feeling great about it. I was like, I'm going to go do some quarters, 60 of them, 4 minute pace. I posted this one to my story, the squat clean one. So it was 4 rounds of 800 meter run. No, 5 rounds, 10, 8, 5 rounds of 800 meter run, 10 burpee over barbell, and then descending ladder on squat clean. So the first round was 10. Then 8, 6, 4, 2, and then 800 meter. So this was continuous too. And then there was an 800 meter cash out.
Wait. So after you finished the first round of squat cleans, was there a break right there, or you went right back into another 800?
Went right back into the 800. So that's
how long did this workout last?
It was 30 minutes on the nose. It was like 30:01. So yeah, I wanted it to be. So yeah, it writes kind of funny because I want it because the running after the squat cleans is what I really wanted. So realistically, you could not do that first 800 and just start with burpees and squat cleans, but I wanted to be doing the station work a little bit under fatigued. So yeah, the way it's kind of written, like 5 rounds, 800 meter burpees over, 10 burpees over barbell, descending squat clean to then 800 meter run cash out, I guess is how you would write
what
that.
What was your weight on the squat? 155?
160.
Oh, you bumped it up. You bumped it up 5 pounds.
I put the 2.5s on and buy those for nothing.
Did you start out pretty conservative on that first 800?
Yeah, the run was like probably like high Roxy pace, you know, so not really breakneck, kind of like,
yeah,
that would be closer to like a half marathon effort, you know? So trying to keep that sustained.
I am not doing those long sustained efforts right now. Like, not at all. That workout would probably crush me right now, to be honest.
Well, that's the thing, like, where I've had a hard time, like, the high-end strength stuff really takes my running away so much that when I need to improve on that skill, like, figure out what's happening during the strength pieces and work on that in training, like, whether it's, you know, working, whatever happens during like a powerful movement, right? Like respiration rate goes up, like the heart rate, my heart rate doesn't really go up on this. Do you find this on like a heavy sled push? Do you know if your heart rate goes up or does it stay the same or does it go down?
That's
during the high rocks.
I feel like it stays the same. I don't think I have some crazy spike or anything like that.
I don't either. So to me, it's not like a heart rate thing, right? Like, I'm not tired because my heart rate is elevated. I'm tired because I think like neuromuscularly and my like central nervous system is fired so hard that's what's creating a lot of the fatigue. It's just like a global fatigue on it. And when we're doing just like slower, grindy HYROX workouts, for me anyway, I feel like then I'm working at this like slower pace and it's just very sustained, right? And I have to kind of manage everything. So if I can improve my ability to work have power endurance, which is a term that we've kind of talked about, that's like not really a thing, but I think that it's something I'm going to try to train on. That's the idea with the squat cleans, because I get a very similar feel of this after doing heavy squat cleans as what I would do for like a sled push. So I could have done it, like this could have been a sled push workout as well, but I wanted to kind of work at it at a different domain just to make sure, I wasn't just falling into the same patterns of the sled push. But I would come out of those squat cleans, I would feel pretty flattened.
I was going to ask, like, what part of that workout was the toughest piece to it?
Coming out of the squat cleans, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like the set of 10
and
squat cleans.
And it's not even
a
like a ton. Oh, yeah. Set of 10. And
10 was quite a bit. After
probably
that,
eight feels probably like 10 by the time you get to that point. And then 6 probably feels like 10 by the time you get to that point.
I was able to kind of push through 4. I did the 4 unbroken, which I was happy with, and then the 2 unbroken, but most of it was doing like sets of 2s and 3s. And the burpees felt good. That was actually kind of a break, which I was happy with, and the runs felt fine. So I was happy with that workout, just kind of working on power endurance.
Simple yet effective. Nice, man.
What else you got to plug?
I think that's it, dude.
That's what we got. I wanted to give a quick shout out to 10,000 interval shorts. I wore the interval short 5-inch with the AL liner. Do you have that brief liner?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's banging.
All mine have the brief liner.
Oh, I meant the separate liner. It's like a boxer brief. It's not the liner. I'm sorry.
Yeah. All mine have that in it.
So they sell like a standalone boxer brief called the AL, A&L, A-L.
Mm.
So I have that because I don't have the liner built into the...
Oh, okay. I got you.
I have the 5-inch no liner, and then I have their boxer brief. Works great. And it was awesome on trails. I've never taken on like a long trail run, but this is when I had my phone, you know, because I didn't know where I was. And the pockets are clutch.
It's good gear, man. What can you say?
The pockets are clutch. Yeah, I took a spill one time too. I was doing some creek crossings, just like flipped out and just went down, phone stayed in my pocket, and the whole deal. It's great. Nice. It's good stuff. So yeah, it's good. It's good in the gym, good on the trail.
Might as well plug Powerlift while we're at it. We've both been drinking it this entire episode.
Orange Mango Powerlift.
Shout out.
Shout
out.
We
should get Nick. We should bring Nick on for a guest appearance one of these days.
I'm with it. We can do that. All right. Cool. Thanks for listening in.
Appreciate
y'all.
Take
us out. You brought us in. Take us out.
I brought us in. You take us out.
That's not how that works. All right, squad. Thanks again.
All right, squad. Yeah. All right.